This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Rhea Liu. You're listening to Going Global and Enterprise, where we speak to local tech companies who have scaled to become regional and global players. Today, we're shining the spotlight on Blue Number, a global platform for self-identification and voluntary traceability. It's an open, neutral registry for people to identify themselves, be linked to supply chains, and be seen in complex systems. To tell us more about Blue Number and how Blue Numbers are used to make policy and procurement decisions around the world, it's the founder and CEO, Poovan Selvanathan. So, I understand that you were with the U.S. before coming into this role, and we had a conversation before in your UN hat, but tell us a little bit about your background prior to starting or founding Blue Number.
Thank you, Frida. Yes, we did discuss the issue of food security when I was at the UN, and I think prior to that there was an experience when I was Chief Sustainability Officer of Sime Darby that put certain things into context, which was the relationship between food, human rights, human dignity. When I was at the UN, the work that I was doing there very clearly brought these strands together. And so what we see now in Blue Number is a convergence of all of those ideas where technology today actually allows for people to assert themselves in complex networks. They allow themselves to be visible. So this idea that human dignity and food security are predicated upon someone being seen, to both say, listen, I'm part of the system, but also to say, I need food security.
Right.
You know, that's how Blue Number has emerged.
Okay. And when did you start Blue Number?
So Blue Number has evolved, I suppose, conceptually, perhaps over the last maybe, 10 years or so as a concept where it's been encapsulated as a thing.
It's in the head.
In the head. I suppose I've been working on it for 40 years. But really, in the last 3 years, it's become apparent that you can do it. I mean, you can do something like Blue Number. You know, you needed a lot of things to happen. The cost, for example, for, mobile phones to go down, the ability for people to be connected. So for it to take shape and take root as a real living thing has been within the last 3 years.
Right, because with technology, with advancements and all these things, it was made possible.
Exactly.
Right. And why the name Blue Number?
Well, originally it was because so many of the ideas from the UN were influencing my thinking. So, hence Blue Number. Blue also just seems to be a fairly kind of unobjectionable color. So,
as opposed to red.
Red, yeah. We don't want to get red flags up and all sorts of things. So blue is it's a sensible color for internet technology.
So how does it work actually?
So there are ways, in which blue numbers happen. We're a digital identity platform. I mean, as you said in the opening, there's the idea of self-sovereignty with identity. So you claim your identity, you assert your identity in the digital space. Now, the consequence is that, as we've seen with things like Facebook recently and others, this identity has actually already been used by many quarters, but probably you did not realize it. So in effect, we are all data slaves. Our identity has been used for others to create wealth from. So when we look at the mechanism for Blue Number, how does a Blue Number happen? Is in the ideal sense, you set yourself up to say, hey, listen, I don't want to be anonymous in the digital ether. So you create a registration for yourself and you say, this is me. And then things begin from that point. So what is the difference between a Blue Number as an identity and, let's say, other forms of identity? In the Blue Numbers case, you are self-sovereign. You have declared your position, and you are now saying that everything else that happens from this point actually reinforces the claim that I make about myself. Unlike other identity where someone has said, you are this person, whether it's a government or whether it's a company or whomever it is. So we assume that as we move forward, people are going to become more conscious of themselves. And as they do, they will also become more conscious of the value that they have to others by way of their digital persona.
Right.
So this is where the ownership of data, the ownership of being able to claim that property right, blue numbers registration effectively says that you have staked your claim to yourself. So that's the first way of doing it, the best way. It's very difficult, however, to get people to understand that. You know, conceptually, it's actually quite a leap. So the way that we have chosen to proceed, you know, the business model that we have adopted first, is to look at traceability in supply chains. So what we do here is we assign blue numbers. We assume that if you have a supply chain in operation, there are already tens of thousands of people involved in it. And the purpose of those tens of thousands of people as a community is already established. They are producing something. So because of, you know, I'm Malaysian and I'm familiar previously with my experience in the palm oil sector, I looked at palm oil as being the first expression of how we may be able to apply blue numbers and traceability. So now the systems that we've got actually allow for farmers from the lowest tier in the most rural areas to be able to express themselves and say, listen, hey, I'm here. I'm not just in the black box of production that then ends up in a consumer space, whether it's domestic or whether it's international. So we look at a supply chain and we say that there must be 20,000 blue numbers here. So we already assign them up front. We then look at public registries. We look at supply chains which are given from companies. And we triangulate the information to say that we know there's somebody there. We may not necessarily know their name or their location yet. But as the other pieces of information come into resolution, you can clearly say, well, actually, this person is this person.
Right.
So the blue number community actually evolves through the data.
Okay, so who is your client?
That's a very good question. I mean, at the outset, our client is people who want to understand traceability. So that's the first group who, for example, need to de-risk their supply chains. They need to be able to make claims to their consumers to say, I know where my stuff is coming from. You see, for example, with palm oil, as, you know, it's a very good case. People are concerned that palm oil is coming from areas which may be open to deforestation or open burning or all sorts of, you know, practices. Right. Now, with our technology, there's no question anymore. You know, because you can actually see that, hey, you know, this farmer is the person who produced the oil that went into this shipment. Over the last 3 weeks, there's been no open burning on their farm. So the oil was harvested at a time when there was no open burning.
It's transparency.
Yeah, it's complete transparency. There's no doubt anymore. So you can begin to, you know, to evidence these claims absolutely empirically. Then you can get onto other issues, which are probably more material. But if you look at most of the discussions that are happening today, they're based on an ambiguity that does not need to continue because the technology allows for it. Your question was, who is my client? After you get past this meta level of people wanting to know things about their supply chain, the ultimate client are the blue number holders. So I see our clients as actually being, you know, 10 billion people on the planet by 2050.
Right.
So everyone who has a blue number now should be able to monetize their data to create wealth from it and to be able to use the blue number as a channel on how to do that.
Right. This is what, blockchain technology?
So blockchain is a word that is thrown around, you know, fairly aggressively.
Bandied around.
It's bandied around. And, you know, blockchain technology has, we do use blockchain in certain parts of our system. We use blockchain when we need to secure certain transactions and relationships that are immutable. The challenge with blockchain has been that you cannot be forgotten in blockchain. So this runs into some privacy concerns because if later on, you know, you decide that you do want to be relieved of the burden of being known by everybody, blockchain doesn't quite make that happen for you. So we actually separate blockchain from transactions with the personal data that we hold on blue numbers. So if you go into our blockchain, you can see all the blue numbers involved in a transaction. But if you're a blue number holder, you can actually choose to remove your information from the blue number file,
right,
which means you have the blue number to know that this transaction happened, but you may not necessarily know you know, who was behind it if that person has chosen to remove themselves from blockchain.
Right. So but what's the business model for you? Where's the money coming from?
So we have different sources of or streams of revenue. In the first instance, we look at traceability services. So we do dashboards that map out the entire network, and that allows for risk analysis. The provision of the dashboard in itself, you know, obviously there's setup fees, there's maintenance fees. We look at data provision and data maintenance and hosting. So we update the quality of the data continually, not just from a single source, but from several sources. So there's a subscription that goes towards maintaining the data points.
Mm, all right.
That's our revenue.
Okay, so we'll continue our conversation about Blue Number. I'm here with Pooven Sabanathan, founder and CEO. Stay tuned to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Good morning, Frida Liu. If you've just joined us, this is Going Global in Enterprise. I've got Pooven Sabanathan here, founder and CEO of Blue Number, and this is a global platform for self-identification and voluntary traceability. So this is, when you talk about, is it just focused on food security, or are you? Is this technology used, can be used for other industries as well?
It's a digital identity platform, so it's really can be used for any activity that any human being is involved in. By extension, it is also for any activity that involves any entity that that person interacts with. So organizations, places, things, all sorts of things can be given identities. I mean, we are familiar now with the IoT, you know, Internet of Things. What that implies is that there is an identity for the Internet to be able to lock onto. So our pilots, our proof of concepts and so forth that we've done so far have been based in palm oil as being, shall we say, the most complex form of commodity-based agriculture. If you can do palm oil, you can do almost anything else on the planet, you know, as far as agriculture goes.
Right.
Because palm oil is you know, the ultimate black box, and then it's blended at various stages. So if you do something like, shall we say, cheese from Italy, you know exactly who the cheesemaker is, so there's no doubt there. So any other form of agriculture, we can do, you know, pretty simply as a derivation of our palm oil solution. The next group of solutions we're putting out is for manufacturing. So we're doing ready-made garments from Bangladesh. There, you're looking at the workers in factories as opposed to farmers. Then, if you do that as a manufacturing solution, you can do that for any manufacturing solution. And then we look at, as you'd asked me before, you know, the clients. We look at the services that those workers and farmers would be availing themselves of once they had the technology in their hands. So really what we're bringing to the table is a new consumer group, which is the 1 billion that are getting their phones for the first time. So rather than getting their phones and thinking, well, am I now going to post a picture of a pet that I don't have on Facebook, you can actually use your data in a meaningful way to say, look, you know, I'm a worker, I'm a farmer, this is what I produce, this is how I want to, you know, monetize my digital profile and make myself available to other people. So you take control of that. That's our mission.
Is this solution called Blue View?
So Blue View is the representation of blue numbers on a dashboard. Any construct of a network. So we have public Blue View, we have private Blue View. If you go to our website at bluenumber.com, you actually see what we call public Blue View. So you see, I think now we have about 500,000 blue numbers that have been registered in one form or another. Then when you go to private Blue View, it actually shows subsets of those which link to particular supply chains or particular conditions. So if you want to ask, you know, who is in the supply chain of X company, then that becomes a private Blue View for that company, but it's drawn from the same database.
Right. Okay, so you're obviously based in Malaysia?
We are based in several countries. We're a micro multinational. It's simply because of the nature of the business where if we look at global supply chains, you actually have an axial relationship usually between north and south. So the company was started in the US, in New York. We now have offices in Tokyo, In Kuala Lumpur is our tech basis. Our largest office is here in KL. We have an office in Dhaka. We've just opened an office in Munich in Europe as well.
And how many people would you have in the organization?
We have about 40 people spread across these offices.
And these would be the technology experts.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of technology has also moved a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that, you know, we have the expertise to understand how to bundle and use technology. We don't build technology. We're not a software development house. We are a data handling and analytics provider. If you recall, you know, in the old days, if you wanted to do something like word processing, you had to kind of build, you know, a word processing engine. Today, you use Microsoft Word. Mm. So we don't build basic technology. We use mapping. We use some machine learning, some AI. So the people that we have actually know how to put things together. They know how to get the output that you want, answer the question that you need, rather than assuming that everything is built from scratch.
Right. Okay. You're going through a listing exercise soon.
We are exploring opportunities here in Malaysia. As a Malaysian, I have always been very encouraged by the fact that Malaysia has shown leadership to a significant part of the world that is on the cusp of development. And I think that the progress that has been made by the capital markets here, and the innovations of the of Bursa and Securities Commission and so forth, actually give me a great deal of confidence on why it is that we should be doing something here as opposed to, you know, Singapore or Hong Kong or even, you know, New York. I think that this kind of solution that we're putting forward, which is a digital identity solution for the next billion, would be best represented if it comes from a country like Malaysia. If you look at African nations or, you know, the Indian subcontinent, Latin America, Malaysia is a better model for this. And so if we can get recognized institutionally here, that would certainly help and give confidence to, you know, Malaysian products, Malaysian solutions, Malaysian technology.
Right. In terms of what you do, is there a competition?
Not so much. As I said, before, we had to wait for an alignment of stars between the technology becoming very affordable. By this, I mean mobile phones and connectivity. We had to wait for people becoming aware of, you know, the value of their own data. You know, we needed to have Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and all sorts of things happening. We need to have, you know, a generation that is comfortable with the idea that privacy is not the construct of being alone or being left alone. You know, privacy is about how you manage your digital boundaries. So all of these things, come into play really only over the last 2-3 years.
Right.
If we look at the competition that I have, I mean, for example, you know, the big social media platforms are not our competition because their business models are predicated upon using your data to make money for them.
Right.
In our case, our business model is predicated upon, you know, essentially becoming kind of broker, like a real estate agent for your data, but you are fully aware of what your house is worth, you know, and how many bedrooms it's got and who's walking around it. So this is the difference in model. There is no one at the moment who is looking at that model.
Right.
So that's the difference that we have in terms of competition.
How do you market something like this?
You market it to a younger generation. I mean, my focus groups are my teenage daughters. So whenever I think about, you know, how it is that we're going to move something along, I ask them, look, you know, would this be in any way relevant to, you know, to a Snapchat generation? I get fairly immediate responses because I suppose, you know, quote unquote, kids these days, you know, couldn't really be bothered to even explain why things may be right or wrong, which is great because, you know, that in itself says something.
Yeah.
You know, the simplicity by which you should be able to create and manage your own digital identity is something which is second nature or first nature, you know, to people who have been born you know, right. after 2000.
They either say great or it sucks.
Exactly. and there's no, you know, there was, I remember a conversation I specifically had with my daughters about employers, you know, going through social media files and looking at, you know, the parties that you used to attend and then looking at that at the time of your interview. And I said to my daughter, well, what do you think of this conceptually? Mm. And I think they were 14 or 15 at the time. I said, well, hey, you know, if an employer is bothered about the parties that I went to, which are on my social media account that they dug up, you know, when I was, you know, 15 years old, that's life. Mm. You know, I'm not going to make time to erase that. This is just, you know, they should know that I'm functioning as a teenager. And so it reflects more on the employer if they think that their character is being judged by an identity that is no longer relevant because I've already had university and all the rest of it. So I find that very salient. And, you know, that's a very 12-year-olds today are very grown up. And we are building this. I mean, everything that we're doing here at Blue Number is future-oriented. It's about people and data.
Right.
And the understanding of people and data to somebody who's been born with a phone in their hands is very different, you know, to anybody who's over the age of 40. Exactly.
All right. And what have, you know, setting this up, you know, it's been about, 3 years you were saying. Well, what have been some of the challenges in setting up? What was it funding? Was it just trying to get people to understand what you're trying to do?
I think both of those. I mean, we actually had, and we still do, we have a number of supporters who've, you know, seen us through paid, you know, development cycles, proof of concepts, and so forth. So the funding is, you know, is as tight as with any startup, but we have fairly good provenance, there's been an inertia to look for solutions in this area. So I'm very grateful to have had, you know, some support from people who have faith that this is the future. So that's great. Mm. So those were the sort of challenges, you know, that we'd face. In terms of understanding, there is always a kind of, you know, the penny drops moment. Mm. So when I'm explaining it to somebody and then, you know, if they get it, they just get it.
Right? If they don't.
And if they don't, it's very difficult to convince somebody of the merit of something if what they're used to is a very brick and mortar, or they don't understand data. You know, you have to understand data to kind of get it.
Mm. Okay, so, and you're working with MDEC, right? Why are you working with MDEC on the GAIN program?
Well, I mean, I think MDEC is, you know, at the vanguard of how companies that want to demonstrate the innovation of Malaysia that will be able to take us into that, you know, that next step of you know, the fourth generation of thinking. Mm. So we're very happy to, you know, to have had MDEC support, everyone whom we have engaged with at MDEC has sort of given us, you know, pointers in the right direction on what to do. They have introduced us to a peer group, which has been valuable for us. Mm. So generally, I think, you know, MDEC has been very representative of how the government and government agencies or quasi-government agencies would be able to help, you know, startups.
I know that they come in through helping via visibility, market access, money, and mentorship. So in this case, the mentorship, I guess, in a way, you were talking about the peer group, that kind of conversation has been most relevant to you?
To a certain degree. I mean, I would assume that you know, moving forward, we'll be able to take more advantage of those things. Mm. At this point, you know, we have been working more directly with MDEC themselves. And being able to have them help us navigate what would be processes for, you know, MSC application and that sort of thing. So that's been very valuable. As we move forward, I think the peer group for this kind of model of business, this kind of, you know, data-centric technology, there is still some room, which we've been discussing with MDEC as well, on how it is that we need to create, you know, some AI clusters or some, you know, machine learning clusters and bring that level of sophistication on data handling to become something that, you know, we can do here in Malaysia.
Right. So the listing exercise, you're hoping that goes through 2018, 2019. What else can we expect from you guys?
I mean, the realm of data, you know, is quote-unquote incredible. I mean, you discover and stumble upon new things with every new piece of data that you uncover. Some of the clients that we've been working with, for example, you know, we get to a point with them where they ask us to advise them on what questions we could now ask about their project, because the data becomes too overwhelming. When I look at 2018 and 2019, I mean, the realm of digital identity, I think, is just going to really take root. It is going to explode with the population.
Right.
So when we look at a planet with 10 million people, where you're having to look at, you know, effectively applying just-in-time technologies to making sure that food gets to their plates, when you look at concepts of human dignity and human rights, when we have the issues of modern slavery that become more pervasive now, all of this has got to be predicated upon knowing people and upon people knowing themselves. Okay. So people taking charge of themselves opens up a huge opportunity. I mean, you know, it's no longer just the paradigm or dynamic of, you know, a consumer. You are now so much more than that. And so the opportunities that await for us as Blue Number in 2018 and 2019, it's
all right.
Endless.
All right. Thanks for being with us. I've been speaking to Pooven Selvanathan from Blue Number. And for more information on the MDEC GAIN program, head on over to their website, mdec.my/gain. Going Global is brought to you by the MDEC GAIN program, Building Global Tech Champions. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.